Nazareth told us,
these were the descendants of Yitzchak, the son of Avram. Avram gave, the father gave birth to Yitzchak. Rashi tells us the reason why it was repeated is because, well, two interpretations, but one interpretation that Rashi gives is because the Mitzanei Hador, the scoffers of the generation, went around saying that from Avimelech, the Sabra Sarah, the scoffers of their generation, went around saying that Sarah so many years was not able to have a child, and all of a sudden she gave birth, so it must be that miracles don't happen, so it must be that she became pregnant from Avimelech. So now it's very interesting because there had to be a miracle anyway, because we said Sarah was old. So if Sarah was old, so they had to admit that there was a miracle. So what did they gain by going ahead and stop? So it sees that although they do have to believe that there's a miracle, but when they're talking about Avram Avinu, if in any way, because Avram personified the priest of God, and if any way they could lessen the amount of miracles which can be attributed to Avram, they themselves would go ahead and would accomplish something. That's the way the Brisker Rav says, that the idea was the Tzanei Hador, so they're kofir and emunah. So Avram epitomized emunah, faith in God. Any time that they could diminish or detract from his stature, from his greatness, then they would surely go ahead and be accomplishing something. I think you could say a simple answer, like we explained last week, that there were two different kind of miracles. Sarah, in appearance, looked like a young lady. Avram looked like an old man. So, of course, the miracle that occurred to Sarah, we said, was different than the miracle that occurred to Avram. The miracle that occurred to Sarah was that she became rejuvenated in the sense she received her youth back again. The miracle that occurred to Avram is that a person who looked his age but was able to have a child. So by going ahead and saying that it's not a miracle, it was from Avimelech, so what they're doing, well, Sarah, she looks young. In the sense that people will not sit back to think about just be denying the fact that an old man like Avram, I saw her as old, but she looks young. So therefore, in that way, they would at least get their first shot across and make their impact. So therefore, what did Hashem do? Hashem went ahead and made that what? That Yitzchak looked exactly the way Avram looked. Now, the Chazal also tell us that until Avram prayed to God, there was no Zikna in the world. And people went ahead and they looked so much alike that they kept on mistaking Avram for Yitzchak. And by doing that, so in a sense, the reverence that people would have for the experience of age would be missing. So Avram was mispalel that an older person should show his age. So since that he should become white or gray or weather-beaten, or priest. So just like that is also a result of Avram, that people should recognize who is old and who is young. But otherwise, they were just like twins. It was almost like a clone, exactly, and that's how close the Avram Haile does Yitzchak was. Then it says, Hirsch also emphasizes the idea that Yitzchak being 40 years old, sentence 2, it emphasizes Yitzchak being 40 years old. Avram Avinu, before, and gives us a novel idea why Yitzchak later, because Avram realized Yitzchak would have to be the one to establish the house. In a sense, he would have to give direction, and he would have to place the spiritual foundation of the home, because there was no second family that had the same background and upbringing as Avram gave to Yitzchak. So he would marry, at best, as he did, someone of Rivka, and who knows if she would have the strength to go ahead and to establish, wouldn't have the knowledge or the experience. So therefore, in order that he should be a mature, a developed individual, he waited until he would be 40 years old. He says, the delay would have arisen from the same cause. Isaac's character, he says, was first to reach full male independence and maturity, so that he could be not only the material, but actually spiritually the whole support of the wife. Now, although Rivka became like a second Sarah, but although she had these undeniable qualities, he says, the fact was that she was the sister, she grew up in an environment of Aram. And our sages always tell us that the boys take after their maternity. says that's one of the reasons Rivka was very disturbed when she felt that when she was pregnant, when she conceived, she was very disturbed. And the truth is that Esau and half of her, one half of her offspring really did take after the uncles in Aram. So that was the idea that Avram wanted Yitzchak to become established. Now it says next that they prayed to Hashem because Ki Akorahi, she was barren, in sentence 21. Well, actually, when she got married, she was only 3 years old. Now, how many years before she became 12, actually, she couldn't have given birth anyway. The Meshech HaChma notes that the word, it says there, Ki Akorahi, if you see the Hebrew word in 21, it's written, Hey, Vav, Aleph. Now, if you had no Nekudos there, you would pronounce it Hu. Hu. He. Hu in English is male, he. And he would be Hey, Yud, Aleph. So why did they go out of their way to write the word Hu and put the dot that you should read it He? Usually when you change a word that way, it has some kind of a connotation. It should have been written Hey Yud Aleph. Why is it written Hey Vav Aleph? So there's an interesting comment made by the Meshech HaChma. He says, we know that Rivka was 3 years old and Yitzchak was 40 when they got married. Now Yitzchak was 60, right, when Rivka gave birth. So Rivka, when she gave birth, was then 23. So from 3 years old, they were married 20 years before she gave birth. Now, the first 11 years of life, a girl is not assuming that she physically became mature to have children, as we now it does happen that sometimes they mature quickly, rather than Brazil once a 5-year-old girl gave a 6-year-old girl had a child, but assuming that she would have a child after 11 years, in the 12th year, so then she would first be able to have a child when she is past 11. So therefore, he says, how many years was it that she was childless at this point? 11 from 23 is 12. So there were 12 years, he says, that went by that she could consider herself childless. He says that's the implication of the spelling. Hey, Rav, Aleph. Hey is 5, Rav is 6, and Aleph is 1. So therefore, the Torah went out of its way to write who instead of the normal way he would be written, in order to allude to the number 12, that she actually was an Akora, not able to have children for 12 years. Now the Medrash says that when he prayed, the Yeter Yitzchak, the Yitzchak prayed to God, it says, Menochat, the passage reads, concerning or opposite his wife. So the Medrash is very delicate in its phraseology. It says the following, that Yitzchak used to say, all the children, he prayed to God, call upon him, all the children that you will give to me shall be from this Sadekis. And she prayed, all the children that you are destined to give to me should be from this Sadek. So now they ask, what was the fine distinction in the words? Why Yitzchak said, all the children that you give me, and she said, all the children that will be destined for me. So he says, very simple, because Yitzchak was promised children. And this points us out too, not in the... Yitzchak was promised children. It wasn't a question if he would have children or not, because God already appeared to him and he had promised him that he would have children. The whole question is, who would be the mother of the children? Would he have to take another wife or not? So therefore his prayer was, all the children that you give me, not that you are destined to give me, that I know that I will have children, but all the children that you give me should be from Rivka. Whereas Rivka's prayer is hoping that she's destined to have children, and if she's destined to have children, then the children should come from Yitzchak. So in a sense, it was a little bit of a different type of a prayer. So it says there that God hearkened unto him, and Rivka conceived. Now we know Rashi mentions here that God hearkened unto him. What is the idea of God hearkening unto him? Why was he worthy of being answered? So it says that because he also had what we call zechus sabos. He had the merit of his father. And it's not, we find in the halacha also mentioned, it's mentioned in the Talmud, tzaddik, the son of a tzaddik, is better than the prayer of his, it's not comparable, meaning that the prayer of a tzaddik, the son of a tzaddik, is greater than the prayer of a tzaddik, the son of a rasha. Why? Because the tzaddik, the son of a rasha, doesn't have for him the yichus or the merits of the fathers. Now, some want to say that based on this, that when you're looking for a shliach tzibur, it's brought down the Shulchan Aruch, and you have a choice, you should try to get someone who comes from a very special family whose father was also a tzaddik. But the Taz says no, he says that it's better Rachmona Liba Boy. Forget about the yichus, look more so Rachmona Liba Boy, look more at the spirit of the person who is going to be, who is going to pray. So the Torah Tmima brings an interesting point here, because everybody asks, how could the Taz, there's a later commentary, go against the Talmud that says that there's no comparison from a tzaddik, the son of a tzaddik. And here the Taz says that you look at the person's own spirit. So the Torah Tmima gives an interesting answer. He says, if you have a person who is great, Rachmana Liba Bey, say his father was not a tzaddik, Bal Tshuva, but he is so great in his spirit, and although he's a tzaddik ben Russia, that makes him much greater than the tzaddik ben tzaddik, who doesn't have the nidos that he has. Why? Because we find he says another Gemara. The Gemara says that Rebbe Lazar went to pray for rain. And Rebbe Lazar went to pray for rain, and the rain didn't come. Rebbe Akiva went to pray, and the rain came. So the Rabbanan, like questioning the greatness of Rebbe Lazar, and Rebbe Lazar was not answered, here Rebbe Akiva was answered. So a heavenly voice went out and said, not because Rebbe Akiva is greater than Rebbe Lazar, but Rebbe Akiva, being that he's not in the royalty of Rebbe Lazar, so Rebbe Akiva is Mavir Al-Midesa, meaning he has this extra attribute that he overlooks his own kavod and so on. He's Mavir Al-Midesa. He's able to overlook that which should be due him, and he has rightful claims against, he forgives, he forsakes. So now, therefore, because he had this attribute in him, he was chosen more than Rebbe Lazar to be accepted his friend. So Tertullian says, I, Rebbe Akiva, came from a family of Gainer. His background was one of Gainer, and Rebbe Lazar was a tzaddik ben tzaddik. So you see from that Gemara that if a person possesses even a greater quality, if they're both equal, then the tzaddik ben tzaddik. But if a person possesses the greater quality, the fact that he is the tzaddik without that background, so he should be chosen, even if they would be equal, because he had this extra thrust within him that he was able to ascend on his own and not have to have zechus sovis. We could appreciate zechus sovis, the term zechus sovis we all know about, zechusim, zechus sovis. Zechus sovis we normally interpret as merit. Merit of one's forebears, merit of one's father. It means that that is true, but the Tzaddik Rav interpret the word zechus in Hebrew in a different vein. He said the word zechus comes from zachus. Zachus. Zachus means zach, pure. Purity of one's parents. Meaning that there's a certain character which is transmitted in the genes. Like we said earlier with Rivka, I mean, nobody can deny that she does have an Aramaic background. A person who has Zachus Sovis, meaning whose fathers already had a greater spiritual arrow, to you and me, will say, pass this on to him. Fine, but now if you find two individuals, according to that logic, if you would find two individuals both on the same plane, the one who did not have the transmitted genes but had to accomplish the entire elevation from his own accord would therefore be much greater because he himself purified himself the entire amount which the other one started out with the zechus sovis. So with that, the Torah Tmima would be implying because the greater, and a lot of commentaries point this way out, that some even are very, very strongly in the sense that a person, forget who it is, Mahdi bin Zayed, to the contrary, a lot of times he doesn't really appreciate the heart, the spirit is missing, because he does everything as custom, matter of fact. He can't really appreciate the dark side. You can only see the light once you see the dark. If you don't see the dark, then it was rushing to that face of this. That in order to be able to appreciate the light, you have to see the dark. It's just like we get up and we take everything really for granted. That if you go to a person who's in an intensive care unit for 1 month and he can't see the outside, the greatest simcha that occurs to him is the first day that he can just see outside. And we look outside, and we don't really, really appreciate it. Now it continues in its says, by Yisrael Tetzurah, Benin Bekirbo. By Yisrael Tetzurah, in sentence 22, and the children moved against each other within her. And we know the famous Chazal, that when they passed over one place, one wanted to go out, and when they passed over the other one wanted to go out. So the Mefarshim explained that she had two primary concerns. Some say she had a concern if it was one child, she was basically concerned because of the two gods, and each god would have some kind of a magnetic force that when you pass over his temple, then he has the impact on the child, and when you pass over the other one, this was very disturbing to her in a theological way. Others look at it from a very different approach, that she felt that it's one child, that's what she felt, and if it's one child, so he's posea chalstea siipin, that means he's dancing in both steps. It means 1 minute he's religious, 1 minute he's an idolater. So this was even worse by her, in having one child who would be a posea chalstea siipin. So these are the things that really do. And which is then, Vayona Ma, the answer was given that she has two children, Shnei Gayim, or Shnei Leonim. Hirsch makes a distinction between Gayim and Leonim. The word Leonim is a government of a nation. A government of a nation. You could have different nations, but they don't have different forms of government. That means you could have the communist bloc. There are many nations, or the NATO treaty. There are many nations, but they have, we'll say, democracies, or they have communist socialist governments. You could also have two, so that's what he's telling her. Shnei Gayim, if you have two nations, fine, you have 21 Arab countries, but no. But Shnei Umim, it's not only physically they will be two nations, but there are two different approaches to life. There are two different kingdoms, there are two different forms of social government. They aspire for two different things. One has different aspirations than the other. The Rav Yavot Sayir. And the end will be that the greater one will work for the younger one. That means Rav always means greater. Greater in number and greater in power. Again, what we said before, greater in number and power means material. Material is the wealth, the material. The material one will at the end be subservient to what? To the one that was weaker. Right? Because the one that was weaker materially represented the spiritual aspect of life, and eventually the material will bow down to the spiritual. The whole purpose of the material was to provide really its surroundings for the spiritual. The Mountain says this, and last week said that, why did Avram go ahead and get married and really have other nations? What was necessary for him to do so in the old age? So there the Maldi speaks about the idea of having many different levels of society serving or finding their fulfillment, we could say, in service of God by providing for the higher spiritual level of society. You could have the bark around the tree and the leaves around the fruit, protecting, providing sustenance for the fruit. So in a sense, all have a part in the fruit. Not only the fruit itself that came from the tree, but even the bark, which was there protecting the tree, they're all necessary to be guardians of the fruit. So, in a sense, that was the Rav Yavot Sayir. And the way the stronger the spirit, the physical material, will nourish and serve the spiritual one. Now, this becomes more clear when you deal with the blessings. Later, when you deal with the blessings, in chapter
chapter 27. So then Yitzchak, how could Yitzchak be mistaken in going ahead and desiring to give all of these blessings to Esav? So we know the various interpretations. There's Hirsch's interpretation, which we'll speak of. Hirsch is very similar to the Malbim, but the Malbim's interpretation was the following. He says that really the whole purpose of the creation of the world was in order that a tzaddik, and there should be one person, we say it's enough 10 generations, like it says, in order to find one person. In fact, the entire world. Why? Because you need this one person to be a habitat for the Shekhinah on this world. Now, when we call, we have Lamed Vav Tzaddikim, you know, the Lamed Vav Tzaddikim, we say. But actually, the Talmud tells us in Sanhedrin, you know, the Lamed Vav Tzaddikim does much more than what you just think. The soul of the Lamed Vav Tzaddikim, actually, the soul of the person has its shreshim, its sources in the heavens above. The souls of the Lamed Vav are the ones that sit the closest to God, and they receive their spiritual strength and their sustenance for God. It comes down through the rules and it fills itself in their daily and their daily life. So the Rebbeinu Shalom, we say, needs a makom for his Shekhinah, a makom for his Shekhinah on this world. One aspect, the one concept is that he has the Lamed Vav. But the way the Malbim approaches it, he says, the purpose of the Bria, of man, was to have a tzaddik here who would be like the representative of God, of the Shekhinah, the Tachtonim, here. Now, we find Rav Shimon ben Yochai saying, he doesn't know how many Bnei Aliyah there are, but if there's only two, it's his son and himself, Rav Shimon ben Yochai, who had lived in a different world. So the idea is they're the representatives of God, and all the other people were made, like I said before, that the world should prepare for it, for help him do that which he needs, just like the entire tree helps the fruit. So when Avram came along, and he filled up this purpose in this world, so God blessed him, that from Avram, the nation that would be the representative of God, the Manrachas Kohanim, will come from the seed of Avram. And they will be the footstool for the Shekhinah of this world, and they will inherit the land of Eretz Yisrael. Because the land of Eretz Yisrael is also very close to this priest. We can appreciate that in the Torah we find various covenants that are made. We have the covenant of Sinai, which is the covenant binding Torah and God. And later you find the covenant of Avos Sinaiah, which they did before they re-dwelling. We find that they repeated and accepted the responsibilities and the bliss of Torah before they entered into the Holy Land. The reason given there was to really incorporate Eretz Yisrael into the bliss of Torah. And there's it's like a triangle. The truth is that the entire strength of Klal Yisrael, and when the Jews prosper, when do they realize their ultimate goal and fulfillment? When they are bound to God with this bliss, the same is true with the land of Israel. For the land of Israel to be able to function with Israel, it's only if the Torah is observed there. So you have this intimate bliss between Israel, Klal Israel, which they were given in Torah. This was the idea. Now God will choose, he continues the mountain, nobody could give such a blessing to a child. Because that blessing really depends on the sanctity of the people, and the sanctity you can give him the education, but you can't administer such a blessing. That blessing is administered by God. Therefore, he said, Yitzchak never intended to administer this blessing. He didn't know which one of his children would get this blessing, really. It would be up to God to choose, not for him. So all he wanted to give Esav, and we can see from the blessing, what did he give? Mitala Shemayim and Mishmanu Ha'aretz. Really, they were what? Material blessings. He didn't mention anything about inheriting the land originally. And that which Yitzchak wanted to bless Esav, why did he decide to bless Esav with the material blessing? Why did he decide to bless Esav if he didn't know who's going to get the spiritual blessing, because there are two? Then why did he decide to bless Esav with the material blessing? So he felt he had an inkling that Esav may not be the one to get the spiritual blessing. Why? Because the introduction to the phrase, to the chapter, the introductory passages to the chapter of the blessings, if you notice in chapter 27, that's the chapter of the blessings. Chapter 26 concludes verse 34, Vayi Esav ben Arboyim Shona,
Vayikach Isha es Yehudis, bas be'eri ve'es bosmas bas elo, vatiyeno meves ruach ve'yitzvot uvono, Rivka. He took these two wives of Esau's family, the Hittites, of the Canaanite women, and they were a source, meves ruach, meaning they constantly caused anguish and frustration to Yitzchak and to Rivka. So he says that these two verses are a significant introduction to the story that follows. But according to the Maldon, these two verses mean that Yitzchak is beginning to feel that Esau indeed may not be the one worthy of receiving the bracha of Avraham. And he wanted Esau to still remain close to the family. And this, he agrees with Hirsch, that his idea was that Esau should remain part of the house of Yaakov, he says. Yitzchak knew that Esau's not going to get the bracha of Avraham, and probably Yaakov will get that, and then they will be separated totally. So what did he want to accomplish? He wanted, and first of all, he said, I could accomplish something for both of my sons. First for Esau, because in order that he shouldn't be like the rest of the land, of all the other people, so he'll have a special material blessing of God, so at least in his material life he'll recognize that this has something to do with God. And also Yaakov will benefit. Why will Yaakov benefit? Because Yaakov will be able to leave himself, set himself in the earthly material work, and Esau would provide for him. So incorporating Esau by giving him the blessing of God, the material sustenance, both Esau will benefit spiritually because he'll be closer to Yaakov, because there will be a spiritual aspect to his life. Why would it be a spiritual aspect? Because his crops will be dependent on Talos Shamayim and his behavior. And Yaakov will be able to provide the leadership that the son of Avraham would be able to do. So in this way, he hopes to bring Esau into the framework. That's what the Maldon says. And then finally, at the end, he gives Yaakov the blessing of Avraham, because Esau is out of the picture at the end of the chapter. So then he knew that the blessing of Avraham would belong to who? To Yaakov. That's why after the blessings, when he sends him away, it says in chapter 28, verse 1, Vayikra Yitzchak el Yaakov, Vayvorech also. He called Yaakov, and he blessed him, and he told him, God will bless you, in sentence 3. He says, God will bless you, and you will be fruitful. You will have many nations. Now the emphasis for Yisrael, Mikahal Amin, is important. You will have many nations. We'll come back to that shortly. The Yitzchak refers to Birkas Avraham, and he will give you the blessing of Avraham. The emphasis on Lecha, on you. Because by this stage already, Esau had shown that Yitzchak had been convinced that his approach to Esau was the wrong approach, that Esau was not worthy of receiving the blessing of Avraham. But otherwise, Yitzchak felt that we could make him into one big happy family. And Esau would not have to be alienated from Klal Yisrael. That's what he had hoped. But really, it did not work out that way, because he saw, finally, that Yitzchak was not, that Esau was beyond imagination. There was no way that you could imagine him to be part of Klal Yisrael. Right? Now, the interesting point was, could this have been, or it was impossible to be? It says, V'rav Yavot Sayir. So V'rav Yavot Sayir, Yitzchak could have known that. Most of the commentaries say that he never knew that, V'rav Yavot Sayir. Right? Because she didn't tell him Rivka. So I'm about to ask, why didn't Rivka tell him? Because she figured, who was she to tell the prophet? If God wanted him to know, he would know. You don't tell somebody a prophecy unless you're told to tell the prophecy. Or she figured that, like we said last week with the Emek Dava, that their relationship was an interesting idea that we presented. While she covered her face, she was awestruck, and she couldn't really communicate to him at a level of a husband and a wife, because she was so overcome by the majestic appearance of Yitzchak for the first time, and therefore, far be it from her to go and talk to him, what would be like small talk, that I had a prophecy, this and that. She couldn't bring herself to do it. That was the way the Netziv looked at it. But really, Yitzchak, according to this perhaps, could have known the Rav Yavot Sayir. But the second approach that we're speaking about, of incorporating this Rav Yavot Sayir gracefully, willingly, to support the spirit spiritual needs of Yaakov would not come against the word of God. I mean, God said, V'rav Yaakov Tzair. So if we take the way the Malbim learns, or the way Hirsch learns, that he wanted to make Esav to be part of Klal Yisrael, it would still be V'rav Yaakov Tzair. In fact, Esav would recognize the greatness of Yaakov. Indeed, the last pasuk of last week's Sedrach says there in the end that Yitzchak and Yishmael, the sons of Avram, buried him. So Rashi brings down, from here we learn out that Yishmael did tshuva. How do we know Yishmael did tshuva? Because otherwise Yishmael, the oldest, would not let you go before him. Yet the pasuk says that Yitzchak and Yishmael buried him. So it seems that the one doctor who was first was Yitzchak. So from there we derive that Yishmael did tshuva because he recognized the greatness of Yitzchak. So if that's the case, that Yishmael did tshuva, recognizing the greatness of Yitzchak, in the same vein, the Rav Yavot Tzair. Who says that there has to be like the clash between Yisrael and Edom, and then and ultimately Edom will be subdued and subservient? Let it be between two brothers, the one who studies and is the spiritual priest and the one who supports the priest, all within the framework of Klal Yisrael. So really, the Rav Yavot Tzair, if you say it was destined that it had to be that way, it's turned out that way, but Yitzchak could have interpreted the message, or it could have been interpreted, especially where the Malbim and Hirsch present the scenario here with the prophets, it could have been interpreted that V'rav Yavot Tzair within the framework of Klal Yisrael. And it seems that Hirsch would allude to that a little bit, because he is an educational tool. We've mentioned this in the past. Going back to the pasuk here, it says in chapter 25, verse 27, it says, Vayitaru Anoholi, and the youths became older, or grew up. And Esav was a person, Yedeya Tzai, and Yaakov Ishtom Yoshev Oholi. Esav was a sportsman, Yedeya Tzai. And Yaakov was a single-minded person, a simple person. Rashi makes a note, what's the pshat Ishtam? Shein Yedeya Loramos. He doesn't know how to say a lie. It means he doesn't know, get involved in chicanery and fooling and things like this. So that's the greatness of Tom completeness. From one of my rabbis, one of our Gavishmas, a discussion on this, you see that the Torah completes tremendous. We would think that the fact that you don't say a lie, so that's expected of you. How could you go and extol the person virtuous that he doesn't say a lie, that he doesn't know how to finagle? You know? I mean, how could you say something like that? Is that a greatness? The person that says a lie is the other way, not the... So it seems it's not that way. It seems that a person is born, like we say, Adam, I will pay, you follow. The child is born wild, and therefore he'll lie and tear and break and destroy and everything when he starts growing up. You have to tame it. And if you could tame the person, indeed, that that he doesn't know how to lie, so he brought himself to perfection. That's called the perfected state. Yaakov Ishtam. Some say he was not a Tam. There's a difference from a Tam to an Ishtam. Tam Ma'aleinu, like we say in Agare, in a sense, is a derogatory statement. Tam Ma'aleinu. He doesn't know better. Yaakov, it says, Ishtam. He was a person who was able to know when to be a Tam. That means normally he was in control of himself. It wasn't like a natural. When he came to Lavan, he told Lavan that if you go and you make games with me, so I know how to deal with you also. I'm an achicha be'anoyis. I'm just as smart as you are. The fact that I'm honest does not mean, intellect. If you say it that way, but insinuating, that doesn't mean you can take advantage. Brings out to the prophet's column that says, Tami tiyeh yu ma'ashem elekecha, the prophet. That it says, with God, you should be totally between us. That means totally bow down and give yourself over to the direction of God. But when you're not dealing with God, when you're dealing with another person, you have to realize to control your tremendous self.